Now, you might be listening to this and be thinking, Eric, you know, that's all fine and dandy, but you just don't know my story. You don't know all the things that have happened to me. And the truth is, you're absolutely right. I don't know what circumstances you were born into. I don't know the things that have happened to you since you were born. The thing that I do know is that your circumstances don't shape your destiny. I know of many, many people who were born into the most loving of families, who were taught correct principles, received the best education possible and all the resources imaginable, and yet spent most of their lives in and out of rehab. On the other hand, I'm sure you've heard of people, and I know a lot of people who were born into unbelievably abusive homes, experienced every horror imaginable, and yet became some of the greatest and most successful people on this planet. I once heard someone say, "It's not my fault if I'm born poor, but it is my fault if I die poor." It's time to get out of victim mode, my friend, and take responsibility for your life. If there's something about your life that you don't like it, change it. Period. Can this be easier said than done sometimes? Of course. But is it impossible? Absolutely not. Remember that those that say they can and those that say they can't are both usually right. Oh, but Eric, you just don't get it. My life isn't all rosy like yours is. Ha! A major mistake, again, that people make is thinking that the lives of successful people are perfect. My friend, I'm here to tell you right now that it is not perfect. Again, all most people see is the big house and the nice cars and the exotic vacations. So when they want to improve their lives and they go through chaos and turbulence, they throw their hands up in the air because they think they're doing something wrong and they have no one to relate to. My friend, please allow me to tell you a little about my journey to where I am today. As I do so, again, I do not seek sympathy. In fact, you might be someone who listens to this and says, "That's it. I've gone through much worse." I recognize that there are many people who have gone through much, much worse than I have. My purpose in getting very personal with you is so that hopefully you can relate in some small way to something I say and something I've been through, so that hopefully a switch in your mind flips and says, "Well, if he can do it, I can do it." First of all, the first thing you need to know is I was actually adopted. I was conceived, out of wedlock. My biological mother, who was married, had an affair with a coworker of hers. She was very, very young, and basically my birth father took off. I don't know all the details, but I'm guessing that maybe once he found out she was pregnant with me, he probably just took off and said, "I don't want anything to do with this." And so I was adopted at 3 months of age. It took 3 months for my adoptive family to adopt me because they had to track down my biological father in order to finally get his consent. So growing up, without even realizing it, I had these major, major abandonment issues, and I didn't even know why. Growing up, I had a very dysfunctional family. To say that my parents weren't exactly in a loving relationship would be kind of the understatement of the century. There was so much stress, so much fighting, so much chaos at home. I remember one time when I was a teenager, I was in one of my science classes in high school, and they had us take this stress evaluation test, and which meant you scored yourself, you know, on a scale of 1 to 5 or 1 to 10 regarding these different stressors. And if you reached a certain score, then you were supposedly considered stressed. And I remember taking this test, and I remember my score was 5 times the level of what was considered stress. I remember just going back home and thinking, "Oh my word, I cannot live another day in this situation." And eventually, my parents divorced. I remember coming home one day, this after I graduated from high school. I was at an evening college class, coming home and seeing my parents sitting around the kitchen table with some gentleman I'd never seen before. I didn't think a whole lot of it, so I went in my room, shut the door, began to just watch TV, relax. When I got a knock on the door, My dad said, "Eric, please come into the living room. We need to talk to you." So I did. I sat down, and my dad just got right to the point. He said, "Here's the thing. Your mom and I are getting a divorce, and we're going to sell the house. The house that I had grown up in, the only home that I'd ever had." Again, I know that some of you might be listening to this thinking, "Oh my gosh, that's it? Are you serious?" But you got to realize, in my culture, in my religion, divorce is almost non-existent. There are so many happy marriages, so many loving families. And I remember looking around at other people who lived in my neighborhood, at all these happy families, and just thinking, what would it be like? What would it be like to actually have a loving father and mother, to actually have a home full of love instead of a home full of discord? I remember thinking how jealous I was just to have two parents that loved each other. It's not that they didn't love me by any means. It's just, again, there was so much chaos, so much disorder, so much fighting in the house that it made it almost unbearable to be there. Well, again, they ended up selling the house that I grew up in. I was just under 18, and so I could have gone off on my own, but I didn't want to. I didn't want to have to choose between my parents. I didn't want to have to say, okay, I'm going to live with this parent rather than this parent. And so I devised a plan where I would spend half of the week with my mother in the house that we were going to be moving into, and the other half of the week with my father, because he had rented a two-bedroom apartment. That way I didn't have to choose between the two. Well, I remember the day came, I'll never forget this, it was Thanksgiving 2004, and I was super excited because I was going to spend my first night in my dad's new apartment. And I remember grabbing my stuff, grabbing my pillow, grabbing my toothbrush, grabbing my change of clothes, and after we finished Thanksgiving meal, which we had at my mom's house, I remember heading out to the car to go over to my dad's apartment. And he looks at me, he goes, "Well, what are you doing?" I said, "Well, I'm coming over. I'm going to spend the night just like we'd planned." And he said, "No, you're not. I turned your bedroom into something else." Now, something you need to know about my father is that he struggled for years with a very serious pornography addiction. And it turned out he turned the bedroom, which was going to be mine, first into an office where he could pursue and actually create pornography, and then later into a bedroom for some 18-year-old girl who he later introduced me as one of his, quote, models. I remember these emotions going through me. I remember feeling so rejected, so hurt. I couldn't possibly understand why my dad would do that. I remember feeling like he didn't care about me, feeling like this addiction was more important than I was. And I remember going home, lying down on the bed, and just tears came bursting out of my eyes. I didn't speak to my dad for several months after that. Fast forward about a year later, I ended up serving a full-time mission for my church down in South America, where I had to learn Spanish from scratch. I had to go from literally knowing pretty much no Spanish at all to becoming fluent in Spanish. I came home, and I ended up getting married and graduating from Dixie State in St. George, Utah. And I then went on to study Spanish translation at Brigham Young University. Now, this had been my dream for quite some time, to become a full-time Spanish to English interpreter. My final year came at BYU, and I felt like, for whatever reason, I was in the wrong place. Like, continuing to pursue this degree just wasn't where I was supposed to be. Now, I knew that if I just dropped out, there would be some serious heck to pay from my family, especially from the ones who had loaned me money to pay my tuition. Now, I come from a very, very middle-class family, a family that has very middle-class mindsets. And think about it. What's the middle-class formula for success? You are taught to get good grades in high school, go to college, graduate, get a good job with high pay, good benefits, and climb the ladder of success. And I mean, that's what was indoctrinated in me as I grew up. That was just a thing that you did. And so that's what I was trying to do. I was trying to, pursue this degree because I thought that if I didn't get this piece of paper with my name on it, I would be a failure. And sure enough, when I announced my decision to leave BYU and pursue studying the bioenergetic synchronization technique through Mortar Health System, I was called every name imaginable. I was told how stupid I was, how foolish I was, what an idiot I was for quote-unquote following my heart. And it was interesting, this fear of judgment almost stopped me from pursuing what my true calling in life, which is to help people heal and eventually start to mentor people. Again, fast forward some time, and this is after I've already been certified and licensed to practice the bioenergetic synchronization technique in Utah, and I had a dream. I had this goal to be able to quit my full-time job waiting tables and begin this incredible practice where I would help people heal and where I would make an incredible living to create an amazing lifestyle for myself and my family. Well, after I quit my full-time job, I didn't know what I was doing. I had no business experience. It wasn't like I opened my doors and people just started, flocking to me. That's what I had envisioned in the first place, but that wasn't exactly what happened. And after a few short months, we had to go on welfare. This was especially tough for me because I remember thinking, this can't happen to me. Are you kidding me? I'm Eric Bailey. I don't need other people's help. How dare I go to someone else, in this case, my religious leader, and ask for help to get groceries and pay the rent in the house we were living at the time. This was a huge, huge blow to my ego. But it was interesting. It wasn't until I became totally okay with being on welfare that things started looking up. It wasn't until I was finally grateful and thankful for everything that we had, rather than focusing on what we didn't have, that we began to receive more. We learned through several experiences that right before a new breakthrough took place, we always experience a time of turbulence. We saw patterns of turbulence and then a new level of order, and then there would be another new level of turbulence, and then we would break through to another new level of order, and it continued to repeat over and over and over again. About midway through 2014, I was scheduled to teach a full-day seminar in St. George, Utah, and I remember my wife and I headed down, and this was before our class sizes were the size that they are today. We had maybe half a dozen, maybe 9 or 10 people who were signed up for the class. And that was a big deal for us at the time because we're like, oh my gosh, we started off with like 1 or 2 people in our classes and now we have like 6. This is amazing. Well, we headed down the day before we were supposed to teach a seminar and we got there Friday night. We got to the hotel where the class was going to be held and my wife and I began to set up and we then realized that all of our equipment wasn't working. Now, if you know me, you know that I take my presentations extremely seriously. You know that, of course, when people come to my classes, I want to give them the best experience possible. I want to give them a very professional experience so that they can get the most out of that experience. And I remember our laptop didn't work. We couldn't hook it up to the projector. And so the next day, as I was trying to give this professional class, our sound equipment wasn't working. Our audiovisual equipment wasn't working. I had this horrible cough starting to come on. And so every other word, I kept going, I just remember thinking, are you serious? Come on, I'm trying to make a name for myself. I'm trying to impress these people so that they'll hopefully come back. And more than anything, I'm wanting for them to get the most out of this experience. Well, fast forward a couple of weeks after that, I'm scheduled to head down to St. George, this time to give a relationship seminar. By this time, my cough had progressed to full-on bronchitis, and I was just coughing up a lung the day before we were supposed to head down there. I remember sitting down at my kitchen table and just laying my head down in my arms, just feeling so, so defeated because I could not see how I could possibly head back down to St. George and face these people again that had signed up for this seminar when all hell was breaking loose. Thankfully, my wife tapped me on the shoulder and she just very lovingly said, "Eric, there are people who are counting on you. There's a couple who is driving hundreds of miles to be at that seminar because you are their last hope to save their marriage. You committed to being there. They've paid good money for this class. You need to keep your commitment." I didn't want to admit that she was right, but of course I had to. We went down to St. George the next day. We set up, and it was interesting because this one was the exact opposite of the seminar 2 weeks earlier. This ended up being the absolute best seminar we had ever done up to that point. Everything went so smooth. Our equipment worked perfectly. Everyone was participating and energetic, and they were telling all these amazing stories of all these great things that they were getting out of this seminar. Again, we began to see this tendency of every time we are a week or two away from something incredible, like a seminar that we're putting on or one of our new CDs is coming out, everything just seems to fall apart. My wife and I will have a huge disagreement, or one of our employees will not be feeling well and call in sick, or our sound equipment will break. Something almost always happens to see how we will overcome it, to see if we'll be able to get through that turbulence and either pull back or punch the gas to make us go even further. My friend, how many times has this happened in your life? How many times have you let something like this stop you from moving forward? Fast forwarding a little bit more to mid-2014, I had plateaued in my results, and I realized that I needed a one-on-one mentor, someone who could look into me and just say, "Okay, Eric, this is what you're doing to sabotage yourself. This is what you need to do to fix that, and this is how you do it." I remember wanting to mentor with a particular gentleman because this gentleman was, my goodness, he was everything I wanted to be in so many ways. I looked up to him so much. I saw all the success that he had, all the results that he had, how he was changing so many people's lives. In some ways, he was very much like a godlike figure in my mind, or like a fatherly figure that I had always wanted. I remember looking up to him so much and putting on my vision board that I someday wanted to mentor one-on-one with this particular gentleman. The only problem was, or so I saw it as a problem, at the time to hire this particular mentor was $25,000, which at the time was a lot of money for me. I remember the day came where I called one of his employees and I just said, "You know what? I don't know why, but I feel like I need to make this happen. I feel like I need to mentor with this person. I feel like he's the one who can help me to progress my results. What can I do?" She said, "Well, let me call you back." She did a few hours later and she said, "Well, here's the thing. This particular person just announced this morning that he wasn't going to do mentoring anymore." And I remember thinking, oh, good heavens, I waited too long. I mean, he ended up starting mentoring again, but I guess that morning he had decided he didn't want to. She said, "But," and I'm like, oh, goodness, there's a but. Buts are good, thank heavens. She said, "But he knows who you are. He's actually been wanting to work with you. And so if you can get the funds in right away, he will actually make an exception and he will mentor you. How soon can you get the funds in?" I don't know if you have ever had an experience where a word comes out of your mouth that like didn't come from you, but that happened to me. And the word came out of my mouth, "Tomorrow?" I remember hearing that come out of my mouth and I'm thinking, what in the world? I'm having this argument with my own subconscious. I'm going, are you serious? We're supposed to come up with $25,000 in a day? Well, I went back home and I just began to ponder on this, and all these crazy ideas started to come to me. Like, go to this bank over here and get a loan. Go to this other bank over here, get a credit card. Do this and this and talk to this person and this person. I remember thinking, are you serious? This is insane, but okay, whatever. So I did all those things. I called this woman up the next day and I said, I've got the $25,000. Count me in. I paid in full and I got that item off of my vision board. And then the logical side of my brain kicked in, which said, Eric, you just took out $25,000 in loans. Are you kidding me? Do you realize what you just did? And the left side of my brain just screamed at me and freaked me out for the next week straight. Nowadays, when I have my mentoring students sign up to work with me, and to work with me, of course, isn't inexpensive either. When they say, Eric, I'm freaking out. I don't know what I've just committed to doing. I have to tell them, I get it. I really do. Trust me, I went through something very similar when I signed up with my mentor. This is very, very normal. My friend, if you are one of my mentoring students listening to this right now and you felt that way, trust me, you're not alone. You are not the only one who's freaked out over making a crazy, crazy life-altering decision like that. It's true that anytime we are about to or have just recently made a very huge decision that could possibly improve our lives enormously, of course, we're going to have some freakouts. Can we all agree that there's an opposing force in the world that doesn't want us to be successful? Of course, and that opposing force will put fear and doubt into our minds to try to get us to not make those crazy leap of faith decisions that'll get us to a higher level of order and higher levels of success. My friend, if you're going through this right now, you are not alone. I have been there many, many times. After I hired this particular person, fast forward a few months, my business began to take off. And I remember the very first month where we made a five-figure profit, at least $10,000 in a single month. I remember the very next month thinking, oh, wow, this is awesome. Let's celebrate the success, and having this crazy idea come to me that I needed to move. I'm thinking, are you serious? What do you mean move? What do you mean get a bigger house? We were living in this teeny, teeny, tiny house at the time. It was obviously very inexpensive and, we're not a huge family, but this impression just kept coming to me, move into this bigger house. And I finally did this walkthrough in this gorgeous, gorgeous home, this million-dollar home, and this idea kept coming to me, yep, this is the one. I remember looking at the price of how much I would have to pay every month to live in this home, and I'm going, are you kidding me? I just barely started having some success. I mean, shouldn't I wait and see if there's a track record here? But the impression kept coming back. No. Move into this house. A way will be provided. So I remember signing the paperwork at the end of September 2014, and then there was a three or four week waiting period between then and when we actually moved in at the end of October 2014. And oh my heavens, I had so many freak out moments during that time. All these what ifs started coming to my mind, like, oh gosh, well, what if my business tanks? What if I don't actually keep making the money that I need to keep living in this house? What if we have to move out after 3 months? Everything that could possibly go wrong came to my mind. And there were so many times where I could not sleep. My wife finally would wake up and she's like, Eric, are you seriously still awake? And I'm like, yes. She goes, what's wrong? I would say, I'm so scared, Heather. I'm so scared that we've made the wrong choice. I'm so scared that I've just done one of these crazy ideas and that it's all going to come crumbling down. Thankfully, she would just look at me with those loving eyes of hers and she would just remind me, Eric, is it right? And I would say, it felt right at the time. She would say, well, how's it feel now? And I'm like, well, my brain is freaking out. She'd go, how's it feel in your heart? I'd say, I feel peaceful about it. I don't know why. This doesn't make any sense. And she would remind me, Eric, if it's right, what else matters? So we ignored all the freak out, all the chaos, all of the negative chatter, all the doubts in our minds, and we move into this house. And it was within a day or two that I realized, wait a second, I now have an office inside my house, this gorgeous, gorgeous office space. I can do personal mentoring. I can offer that to my clients. And within 3 weeks, I had 5 people sign up to do personal mentoring with me, which paid for the house for over the next year. And every single month since then, I've had more and more people sign up to mentor with me, taking care of the house, making it absolutely no problem to live there. My freakout moments, of course, have continued to haunt me. I've had quite a few different moments since then. For example, I mentioned that we took a leap of faith and we hired this particular mentor. Well, fast forward several months, and something that I've learned is that the more good you try to do in the world, the more ticked off some not so good people are going to become. Well, I had some people become pretty ticked off at me. They misinterpreted some things that I did, misinterpreted some of the things that I said, and they decided that they wanted to stir up all of these lies, all this gossip against me to say that I was a manipulator, that I practiced priestcraft, that I did all of these horrible things, which of course I never did. But they decided to send a letter to this particular mentor that I was mentoring with, and I guess they got to him enough. Because he pulled me into his office one day and he told me exactly what people were saying about me and about him for being the one to train me and to mentor me. And he said, Eric, this can't go on. And he cut ties with me and said, you're no longer welcome here. Now, for those of you listening who know who this particular mentor was, please do not hold this against him. My purpose in sharing this story with you is not to be vindictive, to say anything like that, because honestly, I don't blame him for it. It was simply a business decision. He wanted to protect his business and his reputation, and he didn't want to be involved in all these people who are stirring things up against me. But remember, this was the person that in my mind was very much a father-like and godlike figure. So when I heard those words and he told me he wanted to completely cut ties with me, it was this overwhelming feeling of, wow, if I'm not even good enough for him, I must really be a horrible person. I remember just feeling like my entire world had come crashing down around me. It was that night after I got home from that meeting that I literally did not want to continue living. And that was the first time in my entire life that during my evening prayers, I actually prayed to my higher power and asked him if I could die. I very literally wanted to die because if the man that in many ways represented God to me didn't think I was good enough, then why continue living? Throughout all of this also came my battles with addiction. While I won't go into detail about that subject, let's just say that it caused me a lot of grief and was something that I spent quite a bit of time working with my religious leader over. Because of these things, I absolutely hated myself. I hated myself. Here I was, this professional mentor and trainer, the CEO of this company, experiencing things that most people only dream about, and yet I could not stand to look myself in the mirror because of all the shame and heartache from all the mistakes that I had made and all of the people that I had hurt. Well, this led me to turn to food, particularly sugar, to help numb the pain, to help it so I couldn't feel all those hurtful emotions. And I put on a lot of weight. When I first got married, I absolutely loved the way I looked. I was possibly in the best shape of my life. I was energetic. And now I felt like nothing more than a giant blob. This is something that I'm still battling. There are, of course, countless people who have lined up to try to sell me the latest weight loss products or fad diets or exercise plans or to join their MLMs. But it's something that I'm still working to overcome. It's taken me a lot to overcome a lot of these things. And again, I'm still working on a lot of these and doing my best to overcome them. I know that I will. I know that I can. But it's still something that I'm working on. Well, thankfully, I didn't die when I asked to. Thankfully, I believe in a loving higher power, who I call God, a loving God who comes to his children's aid when we need it. Thankfully, my wife is also a best practitioner who has been able to help me through so much of these trials. But what do you do if you don't have that luxury? What do you do when you feel like you're all alone? My friend, first and foremost, please know that I care about you and I want you to succeed. Even if you feel like no one is in your corner, please know that I am rooting for you. Again, my purpose in sharing all these very personal things with you is not to get sympathy from you. It's not for you to say, oh gosh, Eric has been through a lot, because I recognize that there are so many people who have been through things that are so much worse. You might even be one of them. Again, you might be listening to this thinking, good heavens, that's all he's gone through. And I love you and I respect you for that. Again, my purpose in this is so that hopefully you or someone else who listens to this can think, well, if he can have the success that he's had, even while having all of those imperfections, then so can I. The thing not to do is to focus on your imperfections. I'm not saying don't recognize them and then do something about them. What I'm saying is to not put more energy than is necessary into what's wrong with your life. Remember, whatever you focus on expands. Yes, this means I'm saying to stop complaining. My friend, complaining about anything is a surefire way to destroy your results. Remember, whatever you put energy into, you attract more of. If you are a constant or even an occasional complainer, stop it now. My friend, this is what journals are for. You're welcome to write down as much negative garbage as you want to in your journal, because that's actually a way to release and clear out emotion. So yes, please keep a journal that you can use to get rid of all your negative energy. Just please stop vocalizing those things to other people. One of the things that I wish I could just get out there and drive into people's minds is that social media is not a venting ground. It's not. People go on social media all the time and they just use it to complain about all their problems. My friend, social media is not a dumping ground. Again, that's what journals are for. My friend, focus on the order, not the turbulence. Focus on the things that you do want, and you may find that you end up with a lot more of it. When moments of turbulence do come, recognize it for what it is, and then look for the reward that's on its way, as long as you're willing to get through the turbulence. A mentor of mine once told me, find out what your mess is, and then turn it into a message. Your mess becomes your message. Your weak things can become strong things as long as you turn them around. And my friend, you can turn them around. These things can actually become blessings in your life as you become a light to other people. You then can turn around and help other people overcome those same things. My friend, it doesn't matter how low of a point you are in your life right now. It doesn't matter how deep of a pit you've dug yourself. You can get out as long as you choose to.